Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Critical thinking is all about the ability to analyze information objectively, make reasoned judgments. Critical thinking and problem solving go together. Breaking that down can be complex, but joining us for assistance, we have Jill Tyler. She's an associate professor and chair of the Department of Communication Studies at the University of South Dakota. Professor Tyler, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori. It's nice to be here.
We had you on the schedule because you were going to do some workshops about critical thinking for business leaders, and of course situations have changed about people gathering in person for workshops. Is that kind of training still going on with people, especially as we go through such a challenging time, or is that all on hold?
We haven't been able to do anything through the Center for Professional Development that comes out of the Community College of Sioux Falls, of course, because those courses were designed to meet over usually a day or 2 days with people together, really working closely together. So I don't know that any of that has been translated to online environments, but it certainly, as you've pointed out, is more important now than ever. Most of us work to, in every class that we teach, I think most of the educators from kindergarten way up through our colleges and universities really consider critical thinking to be one of the skills that we work to engage and to develop in our students.
How hard is it right now for, political leaders, leaders of municipalities, the governor, national leaders, parents in families, to separate the sense of impending doom, emotion, stress, anxiety, and somehow figure out how to set those on a shelf and yet think critically and unemotionally without thinking, robotically or taking humanity out of the equation? Help me unpack that, because I'm sort of obsessing about that question right now.
It is so easy to do that. And sometimes I think that we maybe work a little too hard to set our emotions aside, because our emotions do inform a lot of what we believe. I mean, from evolutionary psychologists would tell us that when we fear something, that's good because it keeps us, it will cause us to be safe, to make safe choices. I think that what we have now is such an overwhelming amount of information. And what we have left out of our language in the last several years, I will say, in the last decade or so, is we have started to say things like, I believe, rather than scientists have proven, or history tells us, or any of the kinds of authorities that we would normally, and that we may have relied on in the past. We don't build those into our discourse. We don't include those in what we say. So people will say things like what we have just heard, this virus will peak in mid-June. How do we know that? Where is that data? And we know this because of models that have been created by the Centers for Disease Control in examining the populations and the density of population in South Dakota. Okay, wow, that would be good to know. But we don't have that backup information. We tend to speak very briefly. We tend to use words like I believe, as opposed to I this is true. And we tend to put as much weight. That's one of the most difficult things I think we face in wading through information, is we tend to put as much credibility on what someone believes as opposed to what someone can prove, or a claim that someone can support.
One of the things I'm curious about is how often we've heard the word unprecedented, and I'm not saying that it's not true, that we've been through this before, but when you said, history tells us, it seems like there's a risk here that as we talk about, well, we've never gone through this before, to ignore the things that we have gone through that still apply. So, the lessons from World War II about national sacrifice have taught us, this. or whatnot. Do you see that? Is there a mental block for people if we throw up our hands and say, this is unprecedented, it's no one's fault because it's a virus, it's, you know, it's an unseen enemy, it's up to people's personal responsibility, there's nothing that we can do. At what point do we face the reality of our situation and the complexities and the absurdity of some of it, the impossibility of others? And at what point are we just throwing up our hands and giving up doing anything that we still have control over? Do you see what I'm getting at there, as far as like how we're thinking about this unprecedented, in quotations, nature of this pandemic?
Right, and I think it's so important for us. I have noticed the use of the term unprecedented too, and I think it's so important for us to acknowledge that yes, this is the first time that most of us who are alive now are going through something like this. But it's not the first time. I took the chance the other day to pull down a book entitled The Great Influenza, which is a very thorough retelling of the story of the influenza of 1918. And that influenza virus was first located in Kansas, coming out of World War II. And the way the story is told is in that, as they retell the story of 1918, is, you know, most wars are followed by at least an epidemic, if not a global pandemic. And as the way they went on to explain that, I realized that, yes, these are very much the sorts of things that our grandparents have gone through and our great grandparents have gone through for years and years. And there's a lot of both information, just practical understanding that we now gain from their experiences, but also some comfort in that. The idea that this has happened before, and human beings have risen to accept these challenges and have made it through, in these kinds of ways, by working in collective ways, by finding, by solving problems, by finding moral solutions. And I think one of the things I always talk about when I talk about critical thinking is curiosity, and keeping ourselves curious. So asking exactly the question you just asked, Lori, about, is this unprecedented? And in what ways is it unprecedented? And in what ways is it really a reflection of history?
That's fascinating. We'll give that a little room to breathe here. Which way is it? Is it a reflection of history? What are some of the, because the other thing that is, really important to acknowledge, and we hear again and again, is how quickly this situation changes. So people make decisions based on the information we have right now. As we get new information, we make a new decision, and that can be exhausting for people mentally. And so what I'm wondering from you is are there ways we can create in our mind, a series of questions that we ask ourselves that kind of help ground us? I mean, not a formula for making a decision or for critical thinking necessarily, but are there some questions that can help ground us? You mentioned the one, like, how do we know this? Are there other questions that are just really valuable when information is coming in so quickly, the stakes are so incredibly high, and we have to make those decisions and work through those things again and again? Sometimes, especially once the surge hits, for medical professionals especially, on an hourly basis.
Right, right. That is so true. Yes, the facts, we want to follow the facts. We want to trust the facts, but the facts are changing. And that can sometimes result in people distrusting facts because we think that facts are unchangeable. Nope. Facts change, and especially in a situation like this one. So one of the things that I always encourage people to do is to get really good at asking questions. And as you said, what are those questions that we can ask? The more practice we have in asking questions, so asking a question like, what is that advice based on, right? What evidence do we have to believe that? Making comparisons. What is this like? And also making contrasts. What is this not like? So this is unlike this virus because for these reasons, but it is like this other virus. And you hear us saying things like, well, in Korea, we saw this, and in Germany, we're seeing this. So those kinds of comparisons are often very informative because we're able to figure out what is similar and what is not similar. Some of the mistakes that we tend to make are, and these are the kinds of, we want to ask questions to make sure that we can avoid these mistakes. We tend to privilege certain information. So we are uneasy with not knowing. We are uneasy with this uncertainty. And so we privilege available information. Well, we know this, but it's just as important to recognize what it is we don't know or what it is we know conditionally and what those conditions are. We have a tendency to only look at information that confirms what we already believe. And that is difficult. I mean, it's not hard to look back a few generations and think, how did they get their information? They got it from radio. They got it from newspapers, right? But one of the differences there is that most of that information it had some time. It had some time to develop. So a reporter heard an idea, followed up an idea, did an interview, checked it with some other sources and some other data, and then put together a story that people heard. So we didn't just hear what someone said. We heard why it was said and what evidence supported it. And we have so much information now that we still have a tendency to trust, especially the information that confirms what we already believe. We don't look for contradiction. Mm-hmm. We have a tendency to rely on tradition. You know, well, this is the way it's always been, so this is what we should do. That's another. We fail to recognize what we don't know.
Yeah. Mm. Jill Tyler, I have so many more questions for you, but I'm going to let you go now, and hopefully you'll come back later. And I think it's useful for people because how you think about things is incredibly important right now, and we're all being challenged to think critically. So class can be in session in the future as well. Thank you so much, Professor Tyler. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Lori. Bye-bye.